Excuse me. Yeah, they should come up.
Yeah.
Get ready for it.
Mic's set up.
Okay, good afternoon, everyone. It is 1:33 p.m. on Wednesday, September 5, 2018. I call this informal hearing to order. This is an informal hearing of the North Dakota Public Service Commission. I'm Randy Christman, Chairman of the Commission, joined at the table here by Commissioner Julie Fedorchek, and joined by telecommunications device by Commissioner Brian Crashes. So we have everybody here. This is a case requested by Dakota Natural Gas, LLC. The case number is PU-18-224. And we'll ID everybody in attendance. But before I do, I just want to emphasize that it's an informal hearing, it involves only undisputed facts. If there are any disputed facts, we'll have to wrap it up and issue a notice of hearing and proceed to a formal hearing. So I've identified the commissioners, and for you folks that are new to our room, you need to speak fairly directly into the microphones. And so we'll just go around the table, and if everyone would introduce themselves, then we can begin the hearing.
John Hsu with PSC staff.
Victor Shook with PSC staff.
Patrick Fawn with PSC staff.
Gregory Palmer with Dakota Natural Gas.
Let's try that again, Gregory.
Here we go. Gregory Palmer with Dakota Natural Gas.
Christine Anderson with Dakota Natural Gas. Just for the record, I'm the corporate attorney licensed in Minnesota, but also handling regulatory affairs in North Dakota.
I'm Teresa Warren with American Crystal Sugar Company, and I'm the Vice President of Finance.
Okay. Jack, are you going to kick this off? Or
Mr. Chairman, I'd leave to the...
The company should. Who's going to be the initial spokesman? Greg?
Yes.
Okay. Go right ahead. Proceed.
Mr. Chair, members of the Commission, thank you for allowing me to be here today. We're here to talk about Dakota Natural Gas bringing natural gas to the Drayton, North Dakota market. But as I thought about the meeting, I thought back to the last time I was before the Commission, and that was in the 1990 to 1991 time frame. So it's been a while. I'm still here.
You noticed the room's been remodeled a little bit?
I have. Back then, I was before the commission asking for permission for Northern States Power to run a pipeline to Mapleton, North Dakota, and interconnect with a line that would be extended from Jamestown, North Dakota to Mapleton to provide Western North Dakota gas to the Fargo market. And we had some objectives. First of all, we wanted to increase the supply sources for the Fargo market and the reliability of the gas supply. We wanted to serve Castleton, North Dakota, and we wanted to provide an outlet for Western North Dakota gas. Some of it was being shut in at that time. I look back and I think about what we tried to do and what actually happened. I don't think anyone envisioned the gas supply in Castleton would enable the development of a large ethanol investment and infrastructure in the state. And I don't think anyone envisioned that someday there would be a line extending over from Viking Gas to Mapleton and backfeed the WBI system and really expand gas supply throughout the state. So what I'm going to talk about today is what we envision can happen, but I believe that providing natural gas infrastructure in the state creates additional options. Some of those things we can foresee today and some we can't, but by having it there, it helps the state long term. And so I'm going to talk about my company a little bit and what we're trying to achieve, and then hopefully be able to answer your questions. Greater Minnesota Synergy is the parent company of Dakota Natural Gas. The company currently has two subsidiaries. The first is Greater Minnesota Transmission. That is an intrastate pipeline company in Minnesota, has 11 intrastate pipelines serving various markets. The second is Greater Minnesota Gas, and that is a natural gas distribution company. We serve about 8,500 customers, really spread throughout the state. Both of the companies are focused on providing service to rural markets that have not traditionally had natural gas. There's some good things and bad things about that because we're serving rural, more smaller markets, and our investment is relatively new. We don't have depreciated infrastructure. What you see is our rates are 10%, maybe 15% higher than the utilities that serve the larger metropolitan markets. They have universities, large industrial facilities, hospitals they serve, and those don't exist in many of the markets we serve. The flip side of that is as you look at the markets we go into, our objective is to save our customers somewhere between 30 and 50% on their natural gas costs. So if you look at a typical residential customer, we expect them to save somewhere between $300 and $500 per year on their annual energy bill. If you look at a commercial customer, our target is to save 20 to 40%. The reason we do that in the markets we go into is no one's obligated to sign up for natural gas, and we have to provide a price advantage to make sure we can get the customers that are in our financial models and we're counting on as revenue stream to make things work. If you look at those customers together, though, what you have is a quarter of a million to a half a million dollars a year staying in the small community, and over time that can add up. People can use that money to reinvest in their business, they can use it on their homes, they can pay tuition for their kids, a number of benefits. In addition to financial savings, though, there's also an economic development benefit. So when we went to the city of Drayton, what we saw was that the city had just lost out. There was a seed company in Drayton that was expanding. They decided to move to another city because Drayton didn't have natural gas. And what I'd like to say is our company's committed on to providing economic development opportunity for the communities we serve. We've had in communities we've run natural gas to housing developments. We've had metal fabrication where they use natural gas for paint drying. We are primarily based on serving agricultural load, so that includes poultry, pork, corn, and wheat drying, and of course that's important in the Drayton market. So we've seen people locate these facilities just because we've run natural gas before. Maybe they decided not to invest in that town after they had natural gas. It was an economic development tool for the community. If you look at our company, it's a relatively small company. We focus on kind of an almost personalized service. If we go to Drayton, we'll have two people located there that provide the emergency response and the service. The same person that signs the customer up will be providing the service long term. And so when you're in that kind of situation, you really like to treat people right the first time and through the process because you know you're going to be dealing with them a long term. We also focus very heavily on safety. I can give you our safety statistics. We just received the Midwest Energy Association Safety Award for small companies. Our response time, that's usually something people ask about, is 30 minutes. We live in a very geographically dispersed area. You know, living in North Dakota, that weather conditions can be harsh, and we still have an average response time of 30 minutes from the time an emergency call comes in to the time we're at site. We do things like if we go out to a home and their carbon monoxide detector is failing, we recognize carbon monoxide is one of the biggest safety risks from appliances, and we'll give the people a new carbon monoxide detector. The technicians are authorized to do that before they leave, so that we know that you have an alarm in place in case we've gone and tested for carbon monoxide, not found anything. we still want to make sure that we can continue alarm in the event that occurs. So we do a lot of things to encourage safety, and it's a high priority for our company. As we look at the markets we're trying to serve and grow over time, I show a map that shows the build-out of our system, primarily in Minnesota. If you look, the company 6 years ago was primarily located south of the Twin Cities. It was started by people that wanted natural gas for their agricultural operations. No one was interested in serving them, and so they started their own company. I can tell you the number one complaint that we get as a gas utility is when we run gas to a town or a farm, the people down the road say, when are you going to get it to me? Because they realize it is a more flexible, more reliable, and lower cost energy supply. You can see how we've grown. You can see in the upper left-hand corner of the chart that we're hoping that we can extend into Pembina County, North Dakota, and begin to serve people in North Dakota as well. The service area that we're asking you for permission to serve initially is the city of Drayton. We would build out pretty much all the streets and serve all the people in Drayton that want natural gas. The city has asked if they do new developments, would we serve those new developments? And what we would propose to the commission in our tariff that we would file with you is that if the city is running sewer and water, we be allowed to extend gas main at that time. One reason is the city's making significant investment in economic development at the city level. They wouldn't do it if they didn't think it was needed. But the second is that's the lowest cost and safest time to install it. So what we would ask is that as part of our main extension rules, we be allowed to serve those new developments. The Drayton system would be all a plastic system tied into a steel system on the northeast side of town. The line that serves the community would come from a Viking gas transmission. That is the same interstate pipeline that serves the Fargo and Grand Forks market. So we would interconnect with Viking near Donaldson, Minnesota. We would run a steel line over to Drayton and then run north to the Crystal Sugar Plant. You see the dot that's a little bit above the line on the map. We would run a service line up to a location that we've agreed with American Crystal Sugar where they would need the service. So if you look at kind of the steps we've been doing, and we've been working very closely with American Crystal Sugar, Teresa Warner is here. If you have questions of Teresa or American Crystal Sugar, I don't want to speak for them, but we have asked the city of Drayton for a franchise. The city had the first reading. There's a lot of support in the community for the franchise. It's non-exclusive, and it's subject to regulatory approval by all the different agencies that have to approve it. And the city expects to have the second reading on September 10th. If you decided not to grant us a certificate of need, the city could go on with another supplier if they wanted, but they are very supportive of this effort. We've applied at the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission for a Hinshaw exemption. That would put jurisdiction over all of these facilities with you, the commission in North Dakota. All the customers connected to these facilities will be in North Dakota. We will not serve any Minnesota customers off of this line. The city of Drayton and American Crystal Sugar have filed in support of our petition at the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, and we're working with the Federal Commission. We're working with a variety of agencies to get the permits necessary to get the approvals to do to install these facilities. And you might ask, well, what's the sense of urgency or what's the timing? American Crystal Sugar is looking at options to make a very significant investment in the Drayton sugar plant. And to make that capital investment, there's a long lead time on the ordering of material and to get it in. So before they make that significant capital commitment, they want to know whether or not the fuel source is going to be available for what they want as far as equipment. And I don't know, Teresa, if you want to say anything in that regard. Or
American Crystal is in the process of expanding our Drayton factory, and spending $100 to $150 million. And as part of that expansion, we've got to upgrade our lime kiln. And so today we used a mixed fuel that includes coke and lime rock. And by having the natural gas line, we'll be able to use natural gas instead of the coke, which will save us some money and create some efficiencies within the company. So we're looking forward to partnering with GMT and being able to get a gas line there to help the factory grow.
Thank you.
Teresa, would you be able to quantify your need in terms of the gas? Like, how much?
Yeah, as far as the total, we're probably 75% of the line.
That's correct.
Thank you.
With that, I would ask the commission if Christine Anderson, our attorney, could speak to the request that we're making here.
Absolutely. Go ahead, Christine.
Thank you. We just wanted to sort of button up consideration of the four issues that we know are before the commission with respect to the specific request for a certificate of public convenience and necessity. And the first finding that the commission will make is whether there's a need for service. And we would submit that there certainly is. Dakota Natural Gas proposes to serve an area and bring an essential service to an area that is currently unserved. The Drayton community and the surrounding area, American Crystal Sugar, and the agricultural producers and others in that area don't have access to something that most of us take for granted. And the mere fact that American Crystal Sugar is considering such a big investment with such a big conversion to do this suggests that there's a need for service. Not to take anything away from American Crystal Sugar, but the fact that the city of Drayton has approved in a first reading a franchise that has gone essentially unopposed and where we anticipate approval at their September 10th meeting on their second reading also speaks volumes about what the residents in the Drayton area need. They want natural gas as an option. They certainly wouldn't be required to use it, but they want it as an option. And the fact that they're willing to grant us a franchise when we don't even know for certain that we're going to have approval to bring it within the state says volumes about the need for service in this area. The second finding that the commission is asked to make is that DNG is technically, financially, and managerially fit to provide the service. We recognize that DNG is a new company to the state, and as we've indicated in the filings, it was formed specifically for this project. But as Greg indicated initially, he's been in this business for a while, since long before this chamber was remodeled, in fact. So this is a company that is part of a greater group of companies, not just companies that exist, but companies that exist to do this. The Greater Minnesota Synergy family of companies that DNG has joined is really about bringing natural gas to unserved communities, communities that don't appear to make the business case for it. And this company does that time and time and time again. And so DNG has the benefit of the experience and the leadership that is shared with those companies. And with respect to financial ability, as is indicated in both the documents that were submitted as protected documents with the financial statements of the parent company, and then also as indicated in the data requests, this DNG will be a separate entity, but we have presented the financials and the project plan to the same banks that are familiar with the Greater Minnesota Synergy family of companies, and those banks have indicated that this is a financeable project. Frankly, if we couldn't get the money for it, we wouldn't be here, it wouldn't be built. But those banks have indicated that they are willing to finance the project, and they're very familiar with the family of companies and how these projects work and how these cost models work. So certainly the commission can make that finding that DNG is technically, financially, and managerially fit and able to provide service. The third question, what is the effect on other public utilities providing similar service? appears to be quite an easy one to answer in this case. There are no natural gas companies serving the area, so there isn't direct competition, and no companies have come forward despite having been served with the notice of opportunity to be heard to indicate that they would be adversely impacted by this. So there's nothing but an upside here from that perspective. And the fourth question about whether the proposed service is adequate also would seem to be easily answered in this case. The system is being designed specifically to serve Drayton. It's being designed cooperatively by working with what Drayton needs as we've gone through the process of developing the system, what American Crystal Sugar needs as we've gone through the process of developing the system. As indicated in a data request, the system could handle 25% growth, even though we expect the community itself to be relatively stagnant in terms of growth. And so certainly the proposed service is adequate. And so we would respectfully request that the commission answer all four of those findings questions in the affirmative and issue the certificate of public convenience and necessity at its first opportunity to do so.
Does that conclude your?
Yes, thank you.
Staff, I don't know if it's Patrick or Jack or Victor or who.
So we are simply advisory staff at this point. We haven't taken an advocacy position in this proceeding. We did take a great deal of time kind of going through the application. We submitted the data request, which you have copies of, and we've had some discussions with the company. I think generally we're supportive of what their proposal is, but there's just a few things I guess I'd like to point out for clarity's sake. You know, kind of going through those same list of questions that we checked into lots of different issues or concerns, I should say. The one first concern that I had is MDU is actually serving in the very, very near vicinity. We're within 15 to 25 miles. MDU has natural gas service territory. My first concern actually was that MDU may have been already granted the entire county, but we found a document from 1969 saying that they do not. Actually, they just have I think the nearest town is Grafton. And what was that word that we found, Jack? Environs. So... it's a new one for me. I was worried that they had the county, and it was simply those cities and their environs, which is simply their kind of surrounding area, not necessarily extending this far out. So MDU was served with this, and they chose not to intervene in the case. So we don't have a concern from that perspective. The effect on other utilities, I guess one thought I've always had whenever we're talking about natural gas service is, would that have an impact on propane dealers in the area? And, you know, similarly, they would have had an opportunity to respond. They weren't necessarily directly served with this notice, but they certainly would have had an opportunity. I think they would probably know about it if they're in the community. So we have not heard from any of them. Need for the service, I think that's a pretty easy yes. Everyone who... knows or is eager to get natural gas service if they don't have it. Technically, financially, and managerial fit and able to provide service. This is a little bit different structure than what we've seen with other natural gas utilities in the state, so it's concerning. Not to the point where I want to take an advocacy position at this time, but simply the structure. There's essentially a wall between this company and the rest of... the Greater Minnesota Synergies, is that what? So if there's a liability issue, for example, it would be very difficult to go back to the parent. It would be limited to the local North Dakota utility, which would have primarily debt in the early years. So it's something to keep in mind, but I don't necessarily think it's a showstopper for me at this point, unless you would feel differently.
From a technical standpoint, this staffing will come from the synergy, and or how is that handled? And whoever wants to talk.
Commissioner, what we'll do is we'll have two people in Drayton and in the Drayton area, and they'll be assigned to the company directly, and then there will be a direct assignment of cost if, say, I or Christine or other people work on DNG issues. But the way we're setting this up is we will not we're not able to ask Minnesota customers to subsidize North Dakota customers. We're not able to ask North Dakota customers to subsidize Minnesota. So it's a direct assignment of cost and responsibility for whichever side of the state border you're on.
Did you have anything else to add, Victor? If not, I think this is Brian's portfolio, so if not, I'll turn it over to Brian for...
I have one other thought, if I may, quickly, simply on the size of facility. So I think what I heard is American Crystal Sugar, your interest in this would be for an addition to your plant, not necessarily to run the existing capacity of what you have, right?
We have a lime kiln today, but because we're expanding the plant, we need a larger kiln. Sure. So this would be replacing the existing one and having more capacity.
Okay. So this would kind of eliminate your need for the coke?
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
Yep.
That wasn't clear to me initially. I was thinking that this was just for that addition part. So that's good. So, and you believe the company I think believes as well, it's about 75% of the line capacity would be for American Crystal Sugar, and the remaining 25 is what the town would take to serve.
Yes.
Okay. That actually makes me feel much better about it. I was a little bit concerned that we were just having enough capacity to handle the expansion now, and then if the company wanted to expand in the future, we wouldn't have enough left. So,
you can respond to that.
We looked at different options, building a larger line initially, and we go through this regularly in our business, and so we size the line, we'll install it with some potential to add capacity over time, but ultimately if there was a very large conversion, say from coal to gas, then we would have to run another line. The Hinshaw exemption would still be valid because we're still serving the same market, but it's if you can't put a bunch of infrastructure in now and not use it for 15 or 20 years based on the time value of money, we're really trying to make things economic for the customer and build it as they need it.
That makes sense. And there were, I would imagine with it being a steel line, you can probably bump the pressure up without having to and get some additional capacity out of it.
We will plan for that. There's restrictions on that, but we would plan to be able to do that, and there's a process to go through you have to follow to make sure it's safe.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, those are my only issues. Thank you.
Okay. Commissioner Karashis, do you have questions?
Yes, just a couple, actually. And one thing I wanted to point out, and I apologize if it was already covered, but just for anyone else listening or in attendance, we did issue a notice of opportunity for hearing on this on July 9th and gave until August 31st, 2018, for comments and requests for hearings. So to my knowledge, no one responded to that or no comments were received. Is that correct?
Yes.
That would be more to staff.
Yes, there were no requests for hearing or interventions through the deadline. So.
Okay, perfect. Just so everyone is aware of that. And then related to the project, I'm looking at the grid, the distribution grid for the city of Drayton. Does that cover all of Drayton or 80% or what's the figure in terms of coverage?
Commissioner, the grid is intended to provide gas service to 100% of the city that has sewer and water in it. But there may be something that's annexed that doesn't have sewer and water, and if that's the case, it would be dependent on our main extension rules. And what we propose is that the revenue or the margin generated from a main extension justifies or equals 18% of capital on an annual basis. That doesn't mean we're getting a return of that, but that's what you need to pay for operations and property tax and different expenses associated with having a gas pipeline system.
Okay, sure. And then next question, and it's more of just a clarification for my own, for myself, but I think I heard the words essentially unopposed in terms of the project, which made me, you know, question, was there any opposition at all or no opposition?
I think that was probably me, Commissioner, that used the word essentially unopposed, and I'll blame that on lawyers never liking to say anything with 100% certainty. But no one has approached us privately as a company and indicated that they had opposition to it, that, you know, where we would have explained that to them the provisions for the ability to comment and things like that. And just because I also am the lawyer that checks things right up to the last minute, as of about 12:45 today, when I looked at the record again, there was nothing filed by anyone that would indicate any opposition.
Okay, perfect. And then last question that I have any questions, projects like this, I just call them like projects because this is not the first time this has been applied. Have any of them failed financially?
Commissioner, I'm not sure about the industry in general, but we have not had a company fail financially. We did have a company that did not earn the allowed return. That company is still in business, and the rates to the customers never changed through that process, and that's GMT today.
Okay. Can you give me just a little bit more on that? So the customers were not impacted, but it's still... It's a solvent entity. Everything is moving forward.
Yes.
As originally planned?
Commissioner, this is Greg Palmer. The company is substantially bigger than was originally planned or anticipated, but when it started out, there was a cost overrun on the project, and so we had to restructure the debt and get the company operating viably, and we've done that, and it's continued to grow. So that started out with the first pipeline. Today there's 11 pipelines on that company.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you. That would be my questions for now.
On the second data request, question number 11 regarding liability transferring from Dakota Natural Gas to Greater Minnesota Synergy. Is a summary of the answer that liability would not transfer? I didn't really understand the answer reading it here, but then in your description earlier, it sounded like it's a pure standalone. There is no liability for Minnesota.
Commissioner, DNG is set up as a subsidiary of GMT, and the banks that we work with will require a corporate guarantee from GMS and GMT for DNG. So there is a corporate guarantee. But there's not a corporate guarantee between the distribution companies. That's not allowed, we don't think, by either state.
And then I would just add to that in terms of not so much from a debt perspective, but from a liability perspective, because DNG is its own separate entity, it will also have its own separate insurance. And so from the standpoint of liability in the event of some kind of emergent situation, which was also incorporated into that question, DNG's insurance will be 100% dedicated to this entity. We're not bouncing off of or including it underneath any of the Minnesota entities, but there will be more than sufficient coverage available here for any liability issue.
Okay. And on the first data request, the fifth question was how many commercial, residential, and industrial companies does the company expect to take service within the first 12 months? And the response was 200. But based on your experience coming into these types of communities, what percentage of the residential and percentage of the commercial would that be?
Commissioner, we expect to get close to 100% of the commercial. Usually they'll switch. The residential, it's closer to 65%. And then they're added over time. Usually when you go into a town, there's some early adopters, and there's some people that just want to wait a year and see how it works for everybody else before they switch.
Sure, go ahead.
To that point, have you done surveys of the residential customers to know that their interests or to gauge their interest level?
Commissioner, we've met with the city at the city council. We've met with the Economic Development Association. We've not sent out questionnaires to the customers. It's based on our experience with similar types of communities that we've served. We've run gas to 22 communities, and they're very similar types of communities, and said this is what we can expect. Some of them will be more. Some of them will be less. Over time, and I've been in the business for about 40 years, the evolution is towards a 90% saturation is where you're going to get over. It might take you 3 years. It might take you 7 years, but as people see the cost savings, you have tenant changes and things like that, you get to that level.
And are they mostly propane now or electric, and what are their conversion costs for those two options?
When I say 90%, the 10% you won't get are electric that do not have a ductwork in their house. It's just too expensive to convert. They might put in a gas supplement heater or something. But if they're a combined heat with off-peak rates and they were to have a propane furnace, or they're just on propane, conversion costs can vary by customer. For a propane furnace, usually it was a natural gas furnace, and the orifices are taped to the back of the furnace. It was converted over to propane, and you can sometimes get that done for $200 to $300, and you'll have the six-month payback. If you have to change out a heating oil furnace, it could be a couple thousand dollars to change that out because you can't convert oil furnaces. On water heaters, it depends on the water heater. So what we do is we work with the local heating and ventilation contractors and plumbers, and we actually have, before people sign up, we encourage them to talk to the qualified contractor and make sure they understand what their conversion cost is before they sign up for gas.
So do you sell water heaters and gas appliances?
Commissioner, no, we do not. In our markets, we're not big enough any place to do that. We don't have the infrastructure to support that. So our model is based on partnering with the local people that are already there.
Okay. Let's see. In response to question 11, you said that you will have a service center located in the Drayton area and local technicians. I think I heard one of you today say that there would be two local technicians. Is that correct?
Commissioner, that is correct.
And the next question on here had to do with the closest system, and you said Detroit Lakes. How far is that away?
Detroit Lakes is another service center, and that's probably at least 3 hours away.
Okay, so two technicians at Drayton. At some point, somebody's on vacation or something out of town, and you're down to one, and you have a big issue. That person can't work 24/7. I don't know much about being a technician on a gas system. I would assume there's many things that one person can't even do. Are we hamstrung to waiting 3 hours for help to arrive, or what?
Commissioner, no. We work with NPL. So that's the largest construction contractor in the United States, Northern Pipeline, and so they're like, we don't do our own construction. We have contracts with them for emergency response. In addition to that, we relocate. We have two people in each of our service centers. That's not unusual for us. Our emergency response is the technician's job is to get to the site and make it safe. We have valves in Drayton that we'll put in that can isolate parts of the town if there's an emergency in town, and a single person can do that. Our people, when you're on call 24/7 for the week you're on call. That's not untypical of the gas industry, but if you're going to serve small markets, you can't put five people in the town. It just never would be cost effective.
So NPL is a large partner, but how close does their footprint come to Drayton?
They're in northwest Minnesota. They've put in pipeline by Halleck, for example, which is just across the road, the river. So they service a number of companies. Their major office is in Bemidji.
But they've put in facilities there, but do they have people up there?
Or yes.
Is that things that they go to and do a construction job and pull back away?
They don't have people in Halleck. Their central crew is in Bemidji.
You might want to follow up with your name. So you've got the two full-time folks, and are they responsible for the operation and maintenance of the system, so keeping it within all of the PHMSA standards for safety? Those two folks would be responsible for all of that?
Commissioner, the two people that are in Drayton would do the field work, like cathodic protection test and things like that. We have a corporate engineering and operations staff. So some of those duties are done at the corporate level, and that cost would be assigned to the system, but it's a shared responsibility. So, for example, one of the key things of running a gas distribution utility is having an operation and maintenance manual that's up to date. That's done at the corporate level. The technicians are responsible for executing on that manual.
So you have the two full-time folks who will be the boots on the ground, but access to this additional team of experts who will help ensure that the system is managed safely.
Commissioner, that's correct. We're regulated by PHMSA today, and the Minnesota Office of Pipeline is their safety is their agent in Minnesota. There's a North Dakota counterpart, but they inspect us on a regular basis and make sure that we're in compliance with all the codes. We probably have three or four inspections a year on different aspects, and it's a continuous improvement process. I won't say that your folks won't inspect some part of our operations manual and say we think we should do it different here, and we'll work with them on that, but it's a continuous improvement process, and it's reflected in our safety record, I think.
Okay, thank you.
So I think maybe my last question is this. Assess for me the other, these types of kind of rural communities where you've come in. I'm concerned about the people who are just outside of your footprint. They're still relying on propane then. And when you come in and take the big player in the area and the mass of residential, what's left for the propane dealer? And if the propane dealer leaves, what about the farm that, you know, maybe isn't in the community, but it's just outside? Where are they supposed to get it, their energy products from?
Commissioner, if I can answer that, first of all, four of my largest 10 customers are propane dealers. They sell propane, and when we've brought natural gas, sometimes in partnership with them to a community, it's created additional economic development opportunities in the area. It's not necessarily cut their business. I'm not saying that everyone's happy when we come into a market, but one of the Senex-affiliated cooperatives that we've helped put in the gas business, their propane business has actually grown after we ran natural gas. It creates opportunities as well as disincentives. The thing about serving outside of Drayton if we can economically do it, our intention is to try and expand in North Dakota, not only outside of the city of Drayton off of this Drayton system, but if another North Dakota community asks us for natural gas access, then we will be before you asking for a certificate of need to serve that community. And we've already been contacted by other parts of North Dakota asking for gas service. So that's our model. I think that's why I showed you the map, is to show that we're continuously building it out and we find unique ways to serve these markets. So you see, Drayton, I looked at Drayton in 1995. I'll just tell you that. I got activated in the service and I went away and I never came back. But now 23 years later, I'm back here trying to run gas to Drayton, and it's because we figured out a non-conventional model that would give them access they never had. And I think it creates opportunities for the state. If you can serve these rural communities and reduce their energy cost, it'll create development that maybe offsets part of the loss of load that the propane dealers face.
Okay, well, since you brought it up, the potential other communities, would you anticipate, if there are other additional communities that you are able to and choose to serve and are granted certificates, that they would also be, even if they're not connected to this geographically, that they would also be Dakota Natural Gas, or would each one end up being a separate subsidiary?
Commissioner, our vision, and you know, if you ask me my long-term plan this week, I'll tell you is one way, but I have no intention of forming another company in North Dakota. Our vision is that, and you can see it, what we did in Minnesota, you build, it's a pancaking of successful deployment of natural gas systems in the state, and that's how you build a healthy company with a diverse revenue base over time.
Commissioner
Fedorchak,
do you have some more questions?
Just a few. Did you ever look at, just out of curiosity, the option of going straight to Drayton and having them over regulate you basically with that new law that was passed a couple last session or the time before, and then kind of circumventing us?
Commissioner, we did. Okay. And the issue, if you look at the requirements for an Henshaw exemption, and the trick here is you're crossing a state border, our reading of federal law, which may not be correct, but our reading is that you either have to be regulated by a state commission or the federal commission to cross a state line. And so some of the business models that we've used elsewhere did not work in this particular case.
Okay. Interesting. So was the presence of Crystal Sugar the deciding factor for this? I mean, if you have them and they take 75%, how many more customers do you even need to make this pan out?
Commissioner, I'd have to do a least cost financial or whatever, but our assumption is that Crystal Sugar is critical. The project cannot go. If Crystal Sugar gets everything and just says, I can't make the economics work to put in a gas kiln, then we cannot serve Drayton. We need American Crystal Sugar to do this. But once I'm building the line to American Crystal Sugar, it just makes economic sense to serve as many people as we can and expand the access.
Good. And this may or may not be something you can answer, or maybe it's in the trade secret documents already, but did Crystal Sugar help pay for the line, or are they just providing a commitment to a contract, a significant 15-year contract or whatever it is? Are they building that line?
Commissioner, we are fronting 100% of the cost of the line.
Okay.
Crystal Sugar is making a commitment to use it, and that's how every one of our pipelines are financed.
Okay. All right. I think my questions on the technical side and how you're going to keep it safe have been answered, so otherwise I don't have any others. Unless Crystal Sugar wants to talk more about how important it is for your, I mean, you said the propane is essential, but, you know, I guess, what was this, when did you decide, like, now we're going to switch from this coke to this new fuel source, and how did you kind of make that leap or that decision?
Yeah, so as I mentioned, we're expanding the factory, and our existing kiln doesn't have the capacity that we need. So we will be moving forward with replacing it. And
could if you replace it with coke, a bigger one?
We could replace it with a coke kiln or a natural gas. So we're exploring a natural gas because at this time we think that there's some economic savings by doing that switch. Mm-hmm. So this would be the first natural gas kiln within our network of factories. But we do have natural gas to our three Minnesota factories, and we use it in our pulp dryers. So in addition to the kiln in Drayton, down the road we could look at adding our pulp dryers and boilers because we would have the firm commitment and the capacity to do that.
Do you have other factories in North Dakota?
Hillsboro.
Okay. And that's currently fueled
they
with?
They have no gas, natural gas there. So
coke
they use
or coal?
They use coke in the lime kiln, and they use coal in the boilers and for the pulp dryers.
Okay.
So that's the same with Drayton.
All right. And what is driving your expansion in Drayton? Why there and why now? What's changed?
Our distribution of beets has really shifted north, and today we truck a lot of beets from the Drayton district south to Hillsboro, which isn't very economical. So by expanding that factory, we can keep more of the beets on the northern end and reduce our transportation costs.
Okay. And then that frees up some space in Hillsboro, too, for expansion,
yep.
I would assume?
Yeah, we would expand the system as a whole. Mm-hmm. And one of the biggest benefits is the transportation. That's why we chose Drayton to expand.
Okay. Have you looked at the Hillsboro plant to change that fuel source at all, or...?
We have, and it's not economical. It's a little bit farther away from the Viking and from other natural gas sources, so we haven't been able to pencil it out yet.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yep.
Gracious, did you have any other questions?
No. I realize we're coming up on the next meeting time, so just thank you, everyone, for being here today, or being there, I should say. I guess I'm in a different spot, but thank you. Appreciate it very much.
Okay. From our gas inspectors, did either of you have anything you wanted to add to this?
Come get it.
Come use the microphone, please.
Yeah, my name is Aaron Mormon, Gas Pipeline Safety Inspector for the Public Service Commission. And my question is this, would this be treated as a municipal operator out of Drayton?
No.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Jack? Sure, I just have a couple quick questions, and it was related to actually to something you said earlier about not getting the allowed rate of return. What is the company's experience in Minnesota then with rate of return regulation? And is it very similar to what you'll be seeing here, or do you guys fall under some exemption that allows you to essentially not be subject to it?
We are subject to a rate of return. What is in the financial models that we've run is what we call a levelized rate of return, which means you under-earn in the initial years and you over-earn in the back end. And what we have assumed is a 10% return on equity.
So I guess one risk that the company would be facing then is a regulatory risk of us not allowing a 10% rate of ROE on the company then, correct?
That's correct. If that's going to change, and what the tariff we provided, as just a review, we will file a tariff with the state that allows that, and we'll have to go through the approval process. But what is built into our current models is a 10% return on equity on the investment over the life. But that might be 2% in year one and 12% in year 15.
Gotcha. So when you were not getting the allowed rate of return in Minnesota, did you then come back and request a rate increase? Is that how that worked, or were you just allowed to go and ask or just set it at wherever you needed to?
Thank you for the question. Our contracts for long-term levelized contracts with large customers do not have a reopener on rates. It sets them for the term of the contract. Mm-hmm. For so our case, 15 years for the one I'm talking about.
Sure.
And so we did not go back and ask for relief. We actually worked through it. And right now we're earning about, I think, 9% return on equity.
Okay, so we would probably be looking at a long-term contract that you'll be requesting approval from the commission then with regard with relating to American Crystal Sugar then, essentially as a tariff rate?
Yeah, we'll have a tariff for the residential, commercial, and all the customers, and then we'll file a separate tariff for large customers. I don't know if you know.
I'm going to step in and clarify that just for, there won't be separate tariffs, but there will be a separate tariff provision. So in the tariff that we're in the process of drafting and that we've engaged in some informal communication with staff, which has been very helpful to us, it has the clear defined rates for residential customers, small commercial customers, and things like that. But for large customers, like, for example, American Crystal Sugar, the expectation would be that rate would be based on a negotiated arm's-length transaction contract, and that contract would be subject to commission approval. So we would envision then submitting, in this case, that contract, and if there were future customers that were similarly situated, submitting those contracts for commission approval, always adhering to the fact that we would be offering those types of contracts subject to scrutiny for justness, reasonableness, and non-discrimination.
With regards to the American Crystal Sugar, of course, you have a 15-year contract. Is what you guys are negotiating or are trying to put together right now. In the event that there is no American Crystal Sugar, hypothetically, certainly don't want that to happen after 15 years, I guess where would that leave the operations in North Dakota, in the Drayton area?
Let me clarify. We're still working with American Crystal Sugar on the term. We appreciate the data request you provided in that regard, and we're having discussions. I don't want to release. We haven't finalized a term for the agreement, but in the original model, basically we set it up is to depreciate the line over 30 years and to retire all the debt within the original contract term so there's not debt. So the impact on remaining customers was we might have a reduced return on equity, but we wouldn't have debt, stranded debt with those customers.
I see.
And we've not finalized the American Crystal Sugar contract. They're still looking at what their preferences are. We're trying to go through that.
Sure. I think those are all the questions I have. Thank you.
One more time around, Commissioner Crashes.
Nothing else for me. Thank you.
Commissioner Fedorchak. Okay. The evidence in this case, we have Exhibit PSC number one, which is the initial data request and the answers, data request number two and the answers. There's a couple maps and the EIA graph of propane prices for about 25 years, as well as the oral testimony today. Is there any objection to that evidence becoming part of the record?
No objection.
For a final decision? Just a minute before you answer.
And the PowerPoint.
I think the PowerPoint was just one slide that shows the case number, but we will include it. So including the PowerPoint slide. Oh. Okay, so there is more to it. The whole PowerPoint. Is there any objection?
There is no objection. No
objection.
Okay, so that evidence, the data requests, the PowerPoint, as well as the oral testimony, will become part of the record upon which a decision will be made. Are there any other matters for the record?
I would just like to clarify to Mr. Chairman that the application and all other documents currently in the docket will also be part of the record as well, because there is a lot of information in that application itself.
Certainly.
Support.
Okay. Seeing nothing else for the record, this informal hearing is closed. Thank you very much for being here.